unnatural flesh strained at its corporeal bonds. Tugan's eyes narrowed when he caught something through the melee. Before he could analyze it further, a stray explosion killed the Pict feed, and the tactical console went dark. Tugan's eyes met with his sergeant's. It will be here soon. Already, the heavy thump of the demon engine's feet could be heard hammering up the corridor towards them. Praetor's face was solemn. None would survive. But retrieve the reliquary, and it would all be worth it.
Now, priest.
Father Lumion looked nonplussed. It is before you, Astartes. Sister Evangeline is the relic. What might have been anger crossed Praetor's face.
Don't mock me, priest. If you've lost your mind to chaos, I'll vanquish you here. Now.
Evangeline is the relic. A living relic. She beheld a vision from the Emperor on Earth, and it has awoken her grace.
Praetor saw the truth in the priest's eyes and beseeched Vulcan for his strength.
Then we have a problem.
Father Lumion was shaking his head.
No, no. You're here now. Rescue Evangeline. The rest of us do not matter. You must do this, Lord. I beg of you.
Praetor ignored the priest's pleas, addressing his fire drakes instead.
Secure the corridor. Fire points at every ingress.
Gathimu and Anchor waited for the force shield to deactivate again, then lumbered through the doorway.
Astartes! What are you doing? The living relic!
Is merely a girl and will not survive teleportation to my ship.
Praetor wasn't angry at Lumion, thrusting the serene-looking novitiate towards him desperately. He was angry at the situation and the fact they faced a foe he knew they couldn't best with strength of arms. Herculon Praetor was not used to such impasses. Father Lumion seemed to shrink with despair. Evangeline, by contrast, was utterly calm. Her serenity and grace emanated outwards. It was slow, but even Tsugan was beginning to feel his collar lessen just by being near to her. Praetor felt it too. He reached out to touch Evangeline's cheek, but stopped short.
I can see why the Red Rage wants you so badly, child. Have no fear. They won't claim you.
Judging by his ambivalent demeanor, Father Lumion was unsure if that was a good or a bad thing, given the circumstances. He looked askance down the corridor where the sounds of battle were growing louder.
What do we do?
Praetor regarded the priest sternly.
Return to your reliquary, both of you, and pray.
Tsugan couldn't avert his gaze from Sister Evangeline as she prayed. Such poise and calm. She radiated tranquility. Peace threatened to overcome his rage. Tsugan had not experienced that in a long time. The din coming from the corridor had lessened in the last few minutes. It meant only one thing. The Celestians had been defeated. A ring of explosives rigged from the Battle Sisters' frag and crack grenades booby-trapped the entrance to the sanctum. When the demon engine breached the force shield, it would set them off. By then, the fire drakes and their ward would be withdrawing into the room behind it. Tsugan had performed the short reconnoiter himself, from the sanctum to a long gallery, which then led to a transept and finally a chapel. Cloisters and dormitories bled off from this chamber, but the demon engine would have caught them at this point and have to be fought. Tsugan didn't fear it, but nor did he wish to be found wanting when the time came. A desire for flagellation at the Brander Priest's rod had welled up in him during the tour. Upon returning to the sanctum and Sister Evangeline, that masochistic urge had ebbed. Gathimu's voice came through on the comlink. He and Anchor were at the opposite end of the corridor.
It comes. Glory to Vulcan and the Emperor brothers. I go to them now.
Gathimu disappeared, wading into the battle that Tsugan could only imagine beyond the corridor. Anchor was behind him.
Unto the Anvil brothers!
Even Evangeline's presence couldn't quell Tsugan's anger. His fist was clenched.
I will carve their names into its hell-bound flesh!
Praetor hefted his thunderhammer.
Honor their sacrifice with victory, brother.
Tsugan was in no mood for pragmatism.
I hope their blood is worth this human's grace. We don't even know why she's so important to the Ecclesiarchy.
Father Lumion rose from where he prayed with Sister Evangeline to approach the fire drakes. Do you know what true names are, Astartes?
They are a demon's weakness. Words of power that can banish them into the warp.
Lumion faced Praetor. Yes, they are. Sister Evangeline knows true names.
What do you mean, priest? Speak plainly.
By being close to a demon, she can hear their true names. She can banish the denizens of the warp with but a word. That is why she is so valuable. That is why you must save her. Only Evangeline's presence kept Tsugan's rage from boiling over. He was livid. Praetor's outstretched hand warned him to be still.
A pity you did not mention this before.
The sergeant leaned in closer.
But what of the fact she is mute? How can she even utter such a word?
Father Lumion followed the Firedrake's gaze to Evangeline, then back again.
The Emperor's divine will is not for us to question. It just is. I do not know how.
Praetor slammed his fist into Tsugan's chest to hold him.
Go back to your prayers. I'll be ready to move.
He sighed, turning to Tsugan as the priest sloped away again.
Vulcan, give us strength. There is no way to defeat this thing.
Praetor's brow furrowed.
Nor with the weapons we have here, at least.
He paused, deciding on their final strategy.
We hold it as long as we can. Then do what must be done. The enemy must not claim her. Whatever vile sacrifices in mind for this child will be far worse than death for her and the subsector. I will do my duty.
Praetor nodded.
If we still live, I will engage the beacon and pull us back to the ship.
The two ident runes on Tsugan's tac display blinked out. Tsugan's face was grim. Their brothers were dead. He checked the load on his storm bolter. It was getting low. As Praetor backed away, gesturing for the priest and his novitiate to get up, Tsugan stomped into position in front of the force shield. The five Celestians, including Sister Climene, formed a firing line with him. Silence flushed the corridor. Unseen fires sent flickering fingers of dusk across the metal walls. Smoke drizzled outwards like a carpet of fog. The heavy clank of the demon engine's footfalls beat in time with the defenders' hearts. Tsugan aimed at the end of the corridor.
Brace yourselves!
Five bolt guns locked and loaded beside him.
Lower the force shield.
The energy veil flickered and dissipated at Tsugan's command. A large silhouette bled onto the gunmetal floor. The demon engine lumbered into view. It was much larger than before. Its flesh strained against the machine shackling it. Blood and oil seeped from every cleft in its armor. Long, hell-ruined chains scraped along the floor as it moved. Steam and smoke spewed from the engine on its broad back. And the eyes. The eyes burned with a baleful fire, stoked by the fear and rage of its enemies. Tsugan hesitated for a second.
Fire!
An incandescent fossil storm roared from the sanctum archway. For a few moments, the demon engine took it, even staggered as the mass reactive shells exploded against it. Then it charged. Its bulk had slowed it, and it took a few seconds to overcome inertia, but then it was moving, like a battle tank with engines screaming. Tsugan estimated it would clear the corridor in approximately 5 more seconds.
Back into the sanctum now!
The force shield was reactivated in their wake. Reunited with Praetor, Tsugan was retreating into the long gallery when the demon engine hit the force shield. The energy veil stretched and crackled, sending jolts of electricity through the abomination's metal frame. As if it was wading through bands of viscous light, the demon engine pushed and strained against the field. Then, like rubber put under too much stress, the bands snapped and the veil shut down for the last time. Tsugan's Stormbolter was already blazing halfway down the gallery when the demon engine stepped across the sanctum's threshold and tripped the grenades. Intensified by the close confines of the chamber, the explosion was deafening and blew smoke and fire in both directions. Shrapnel careened off Tsugan's armor, embedding itself in the walls and floor. Laying down suppressing fire all the way, Tsugan and the Celestians reached the chapel. Nothing stopped the demon engine. They didn't even slow it down. Three of the Celestians rushed forward, bolters flaring at close range, righteous fury in their eyes. They were scattered in seconds, smashed and broken against the walls.
Protect them, brother.
Praetor led with his storm shield, the demon engine looming ahead. It went against Sugan's every instinct to leave his sergeant, but shielding the non-combatants with his body and backing off from the battle, he obeyed. He was her last defense. Sister Evangeline needed him. Expecting to slow rather than smite it, Praetor was lasting longer against the demon engine this time. Its bulk actually worked against it, and the Fire Drake was able to get in beneath its guard and land a few blows. Bolter fire raked down the machine's torso before the last Celestium was impaled on a hellblade. Transfixed, she shuddered once, and then died. Sister Climini made the most of her comrade's sacrifice by attaching a melter bomb to the demon engine's blind side. Too close to withdraw, she was cooked in her armor while the abomination was rocked, but stayed standing. Only Praetor remained. Tsugan and the others had almost reached the end of the chapel when he saw the sergeant smashed aside. Praetor was lifted off his feet and left a ragged hole in the wall where he'd crashed through it. His thunder hammer was sent spinning loose, embedding itself in the chapel floor just a meter from Tsugan's grasp. They'd reached the door to one of the dormitories. The demon engine had slowed, sensing its prey was near and at its mercy. Tsugan's Stormbolter was empty. He'd have to crush her neck.
Shut your eyes.
He struck Father Lumion as hard as he dare without killing him, knocking the priest unconscious before he could protest.
Shut your eyes, Evangeline.
Tsugan reached around her tiny neck, sensed the warmth of her skin against his gauntleted fingers, and stopped. He thrust Evangeline into the center of the chapel, where she stumbled and fell. As he dragged Father Lumion and shut the dormitory blast door behind them, he saw the demon engine close on Evangeline.
By Vulcan, I hope this works.
Alone, Evangeline faced the demon engine. She quietened her fast-beating heart and recovered from her stumble into a kneeling position. She began to pray. With each silent benediction, the abomination that had been summoned to sacrifice her soul to Khorne slowed. Whereas before, brute force and fury had driven the demon engine to impossible feats, now every step was an effort. The closer the machine came to Evangeline, the more it began to shrink. Its grotesque musculature withered and atrophied. The baleful lights in its eyes started to fade, like a candle starved of oxygen. This was the Chapel of Divine Sanctuary. Its borders were anathema to rage and fear. Here, peace and tranquility held sway. Sister Evangeline was the paragon of that fundamental truth. She was order in place of chaos, serenity opposed to anger. There was nothing in this place or in her for the demon engine to feed upon. She had disarmed it. and by the time it reached her, it had returned to its former size, Hellblade poised above her bowed head, but unable to strike. Ikor was drooling from between the demon engine's armor plates, its body seized as if fossilized. Impotent, dwindling rage smoked away to almost nothing in its eyes. The blast door opened, and in stepped Tsugan. His eyes were closed. He felt Evangeline's aura brush against him, envelop him like a cool breeze. Reaching out, he found the thunder hammer in his grasp and released it without effort. He could hear everything, every heartbeat, every shallow breath. A spark ignited in the demon engine's eyes. Hellish hope became neutered fury as it found nothing but calm in the warrior before it. In a pure moment of awakening, Tsugan hurled the thunder hammer. It spun end over end until his righteous blow broke open the machine chassis that bound but also girded the abomination within. Free of its fetters, fire surged into the now unbound demon's eyes. Hellish claws reached out from the shattered ribcage as it pulled loose. I will feast upon this world. Evangeline opened her eyes and uttered the first and last words she would ever speak. A true name. The demon shrieked before a harsh corona of light engulfed it. Hot winds, the stench of ash and blood, tainted the air, then was gone. The demon with it. The banishing spilled outwards like a droplet expanding in a massive pool beyond the chamber, beyond the convent bastion walls, across all of Sepulchre 4. In the chapel, only a smoldering hunk of machine metal remained. The scorched remnants of the engine were lifeless and inert. Praetor staggered in, bloody, but with storm shield in hand. It was over. Father Lumion had roused too and stumbled in behind Tsugan. What he saw made him weep. Evangeline's aura had almost faded.
Her grace is spent. By speaking, she violated the most sacred credo of the Order. Her unique gift is lost.
The priest was distraught, but glad Evangeline was alive. Tsugan saw it differently.
A demon is banished, and the Red Rage has been dealt a severe blow.
Reports were flooding in through his comlink. He read them aloud.
Their forces are in retreat. The skies are clearing, and the blockade lifts.
Praetor scowled.
It will not last. We have only a short opportunity.
Going to the comm bead in his ear, he contacted the Implacable with extraction coordinates. Praetor turned to the priest and novitiate.
You will ride with us.
Father Lumion nodded, holding Evangeline close like she was his child. Praetor took his thunder hammer from Tsugan and nodded.
A worthy blow.
Tsugan saw the respect in his eyes and made the most of it. With Evangeline's grace gone, the old anger was returning. He'd been a fool to believe it was anything more than a temporary reprieve.
What's wrong, brother? Nothing,
he lied. By the time the sound of the Implacable's engines were overhead, his inner pain, his rage, had returned.
Heart of Rage by James Swallow. Performed by Toby Longworth.
In the blood-warm gloom, amid the shrouding, cloying thickness of the air, the heart beat on. A clock ticking towards death, a ceaseless rhythm echoing through his body. A cadence that inched him, pulse by throbbing pulse, towards the raging madness of the thirst. Clouds of ruby and darkness billowed about him, surrounded him, dragged him roaring into the void, damned and destined to surrender to it. These were the enemies that he and all his kindred could never defeat. The unslakable red thirst and its terrible twin, the berserker fury of the black rage. Woven like threads of poison through the tapestry of his DNA, the bane gift of his lord and master, 10,000 years dead. Sanguinius. The power of the Primarch's angelic splendor and matchless strength filled him. And yet, the other face of that golden coin was dark. Dark as rage, dark as fury, darker than any hell-spawned curse upon creation. The malevolent mirror of the beast inside every brother of the Blood Angels chapter. Brother Codicia Garas Nord knelt upon the chapel's dun-colored flagstones, hunched forward in prayer. His broad frame was alone before the simple iron altar. Wan light cast by biolumes threw hollow color over his face. The glow caught the deep, rich red of his right shoulder pauldron and the sigil of his chapter, a winged drop of crimson blood. It glittered upon the matrix of fine crystal about his bowed head, where the frame of a psychic hood rose from his gorget. Nord's eyes were closed, but his senses were open. His hands tightened into fists. The ominous echoes of the dream still clung to him, defeating his every attempt to banish them. He released a sigh. Visions were no stranger to him. They were as much a tool to his kind as the hood or the force axe sheathed upon his back. Nord had the sight, the twisted blessing of psionic power, and with it he fought alongside his brothers in the Adeptus Astartes to bolster them upon the field of conflict. In his time he had seen many things. Great horrors spilling into the world from the mad realms of the warp, forms that pulled at reason with their sheer monstrosity, darkness, and hate. And once in a while, a glimpse of something, a possibility, a future. It had saved his life on Ixion. When prescience turned his head, a split second before a lasbolt cut through the air, he still wore the burn scar from that near hit across his cheek, livid against his face. But this was different. No flash of reflex, just a dream, over and over. He could not help but wonder, was it also a warning? If the spirit of Sanguinius were to beckon him towards a death, then he prayed that it would be a noble sacrifice, an ending not in the wild madness of the black rage, but one forged in honor. A death worthy of his Primarch, worthy of one who had perished protecting Holy Terra and the Emperor himself from the blades of arch-traitors.
Nord.
He sensed the new presence in the chapel, the edges of a hard, disciplined psyche, a thing forged like sword-blade steel. The Codicia opened his eyes and looked up at the statue of the Emperor behind the altar. It offered only mute counsel, but that was just and right. For now, whatever troubled the Codicia was his burden to carry. Nord rose to find Brother Sergeant Kale approaching, his boots snapping against the stone floor. He sketched a salute and Kale nodded in return.
Sir, he began, forgive me. I hope to take a moment of reflection before we embarked upon the mission proper.
Kale waved away his explanation.
Your tone suggests you did not find it, Garrus.
Nord gave his battle brother a humorless smile.
Some days, peace is more difficult to find than others.
I know exactly what you mean. I doubt I have had a moment's quiet since we embarked.
He gestured towards the chapel doors, and Nord, walked with him. The Codicius studied the other man. They were contrasts in color and shade. The warrior and the psyker. Sergeant Brennan Kale's war gear was crimson from head to toe, dressed with honor chains of black steel and gold detailing, purity seals and engravings that listed his combat record. Under one arm he carried his helmet, upon it the white laurel of a veteran. He wore a chainsword in a scabbard along the line of his right arm, the tungsten fangs of the blade gray and sharp. His face was pale and pitted, the mark of radiation damage, and yet there was a patrician solidity to his aspect, a strength and nobility that time and war had not yet diminished. Nord shared Kale's build and stature, as did every son of Sanguinius. The bequest of the gene seed implantation process each Adeptus Astartes endured as an initiate. But there the similarity ended. Where Kale was sallow of face, Nord's skin was rust red like the rad deserts of Baal Secundus, and the laser scar was mirrored on his other cheek by the electro tattoo of a single blood droplet, caught as if falling from the corner of his eye. His armor was a uniform blue everywhere, except his shoulder, contrasting against the red of the rest of his battle brothers. The color set him apart, showed him for what he was beneath the plasteel and ceramite. Witchkin. Psyker. A man without peace. Within the chapel, one might have thought they stood inside a church upon any of the billions of hive worlds across the Imperium. If not for the banners of the Astartes and the Navy, the place would be no different from all those other basilicas. Sacred places devoted to the worship of the God Emperor of humanity. But this church lay deep in the decks of the frigate Emathia, protected by vast iron ribs of hull metal, nestled between the accelerator cores of the warship's primary and secondary lance cannons. Nord left the sanctum behind, and, so he hoped, his misgivings, walking in easy lockstep with his sergeant. Half-human servitors and worried crew serfs scattered out of their way, clearing a path for the Space Marines.
"We left the warp a few hours ago," offered Kale. "The squad is preparing for deployment."
"I'll join them," Nord began, but Kale shook his head.
"I want you with me. I've been summoned to the bridge."
A sourness entered the veteran's tone.
"The tech priest wishes to address me personally before we proceed."
Nord was silent for a moment.
"I may not be the best choice to accompany you. I believe our honored colleague from the Adeptus Mechanicus finds my presence discomforting."
Kale's lip curled.
"That's one reason I want you there. Keep the bastard off balance. And the other, in case I feel the need to kill him."
Nord allowed himself a smirk.
"If you expect me to dissuade you, brother sergeant, you have picked the wrong man."
"Dissuade me?"
Kale snorted.
"I expect you to assist."
The gallows humor of the moment faded. To casually discuss the murder of a high priest of the Magus Biologus, even in rough jest, courted grave censure. But the eminent Magi gathered dislike to him with such effortless ease. It was hard to imagine that the man wanted anything else than to be detested. Scant weeks they had been aboard the Emathia on its journey to this light-forsaken part of the galaxy, and in that time the exalted tech priest Epia Zeren had shown only aloof disrespect for both the Blood Angels and the frigate's hardy officers. Nord wondered why Zeren had not simply used one of the Mechanicum's own starships for this operation, or employed his tech guard.
"This duty,"
said Kale in a low voice, his thoughts clearly mirroring those of his battle brother.
"It has the stink of subterfuge about it. And yet, all the diktats from the Adeptus Terra were in order. Despite his manner, the priest is valued by the Imperial Council."
"Civilians,"
grunted the sergeant.
"Politicians. I sometimes wonder if arrogance is the grease upon their wheels."
"They might say the same of us, that we Astartes consider ourselves to be their betters."
"Just so,"
Kale allowed.
"The difference is, where we are concerned, that fact is true."
Emathia's ornate bridge was a vaulted oval, cut from planes of brass and steel, dominated by great lenses of crystal, ranging down towards the frigate's bow. Below the deck, in work pits among the ship's cogitators, hunchbacked servitors hissed to one another, busying themselves with the running of the vessel.
Officers in blue-black tunics walked back and forth, overseeing their work. The ship's commander, resplendent in a red-trimmed duty jacket, turned from a gas lens viewer and gave the Astartes a bow.
Sergeant Kale, Brother Nod. We're very close now. Come.
Captain Iban Gorolev beckoned them towards him. Nod liked the man. Gorolev had impressed him early on with his grasp of Astartes protocol and the careful generosity with which he commanded Emathia's crew.
The derelict is near, he was saying.
Gorolev's sandy-colored face was fixed in a frown.
Interference continues to defeat the scrying of our senses, however. There is wreckage. Evidence of plasma fire.
He trailed off. Nord sensed the man's apprehension, but said nothing, catching sight of a readout thick with lines of text in Gothic script. The ghost of a cold, undefined emotion began to gather at the base of his thoughts.
Astartes.
Filtered and machine-altered, the word emitted from a speaker embedded in a face where a mouth had once been. Eyes of titanium clockwork measured the Blood Angels coldly. Flesh, what there was of it, subsumed into carbide plates that disappeared beneath a hood. A great gale of black robes hung loose to pool upon the decking, concealing a form that was a collection of sharp angles, the silhouette of a body that bore little resemblance to anything natural-born. Antennae blossomed from tailored holes in the habit, and out of hidden pockets, manipulators and snake-like mechadendrites moved, apparently of independent thought and action. This thing that stood before them at the edge of the frigate's tacticarium, this not-quite-man seemingly built from human pieces and scrapyard leavings, this was Zeren.
Your mission will commence momentarily,
said the tech priest. He shifted slightly, and Nord heard the working of pistons.
You are ready.
We are Astartes,
Kale replied with a grimace. The words were answer enough.
Quite.
Zeren inclined his head towards the hololithic display, which showed flickers of hazy light.
This zone is filthy with expended radiation. It may trouble even your iron constitution, Blood Angel.
Doubtful.
Kale's annoyance was building.
Your concern is noted, Magi. But now we are here, I am more interested in learning the identity of this hulk you have tasked us to secure for you. We cannot prosecute a mission to the best of our abilities without knowing what we will face.
But you are Astartes,
said Zeren, making little effort to hide his mocking tone. Before Kale could respond, the tech priest's head bobbed.
You are quite right, Brother Sergeant,
he demurred.
I have been secretive with the specifics of this operation, but once you see your target, you will understand the need for such security.
Senses are clearing, noted Gorolev. We have a clean return. Show me,
snapped Kale. Earlier during the voyage, just to satisfy his mild interest, Nord had allowed his psychic senses to brush the surface of Zeren's mind. What he had sensed there was unreadable, not shrouded, but simply inhuman. Nothing that he could interpret as emotions, only a coldly logical chain of processes with all the nuance of a cogitator program. And yet, as the hololith stuttered and grew distinct, for the briefest of moments, Nord was certain he felt the echo of a covetous thrill from the tech priest.
Here is your target,
said Zeren.
Throne of Terror!
The curse slipped from Gorolev's lips as the image solidified.
Xenos!
It resembled a whirled shell, a tight spiral of shimmering bone curved in on itself. Coils of fibrous matter that suggested sinew webbed it, and from one vast orifice along the ventral plane, a nest of pasty tentacular forms issued outwards, grasping at nothing. It lay among a drift of broken chitin and flash-frozen fluids, listing. Great scars marked the flanks of the alien construct, and in places there were craters, huge pockmarks that had exploded outwards like city-sized pustules. It was a gargantuan, bilious corpse. A dead horror, there in the starless night.
This is what you brought us to find?
Kale's voice was loaded with menace.
A Tyranid craft?
A hive ship,
Zeren corrected. The tech priest ignored the silence that had descended on the Amathia's bridge, the mute shock upon the faces of Gorilev's officers.
A vessel of this tonnage is no match for a Tyranid hive, said Nord. Their craft have defeated entire fleets and pillaged the crews for raw biomass to feast upon.
It is dead,
said the priest.
Have no fear.
I am not afraid,
Nord retorted.
But neither am I a fool. The Tyranids are not known as the Great Devourer without reason. They are a plague, organisms that exist solely to consume and replicate, to destroy all life unlike them.
You forget yourself.
Zeren's tone hardened.
The authority here is mine. I have brought you to this place for good reason. Look to the hive. It is dead,
he repeated. Nord studied the image. The Xenos craft exhibited signs of heavy damage, and its motion and course suggested it was unguided.
My orders come from the highest echelons of the Magistratum,
continued the tech priest.
I'm here to oversee the capture of this derelict in the name of the God Emperor and the Omnisire.
Capture?
Kale echoed the word.
Consider the bounty within that monstrosity.
Zeren addressed them, Astartes and officers all.
Nord is quite correct. The Tyranids are a scourge upon the stars, a virus writ large. But like any virus, it must be studied if a cure is to be found.
A spindly machine arm whirred, moving to point at the image.
This hive ship is a treasure trove of biological data. If we take it, learn its secrets.
He gave a clicking rasp.
We might turn the Xenos against themselves. Perhaps even tame them.
How did you know this thing was here?
Nord tore his gaze from the display. Zeren answered after a moment.
The first attempt to take the hive was not a success. There were complications.
You will tell us what transpired,
said Kale,
or we will go no further.
Bye,
rasped Gorilev. The captain had turned pale and sweaty, his fingers kneading the grip of his holstered las pistol. Zeren gave another clicking sigh and inclined his head on whining motors.
A scout party of archaeotechnologists boarded the craft under the command of an adept named Indus. We believe that a splinter force from a larger hive fleet left this ship behind after it suffered some malfunction. Evidence suggests...
This adept, Indus,
Kale broke in.
Where is he?
Zeren looked away.
The scouting party did not return. Their fate is unknown to me.
Consumed,
grated Gorilev.
Thrown and blood! Any man that ventures in there would be torn apart.
Captain...
warned the brother sergeant. The tech priest paid no attention to the officer's outburst.
It is my firm belief that the hive ship, although not without hazards, is dormant. For the moment, at least.
He came closer on iron-clawed feet.
You understand now why the Adeptus Mechanicus wished to move with alacrity, Blood Angel.
I understand,
Kale replied, and Nord saw the tightening of his jaw. Without another word, the veteran turned on his heel and strode away. Nord moved with him, and they were into the corridor before the Space Marine felt a hand on his forearm.
Lords,
Gorilev shot a look back towards the bridge as the hatch slammed shut, his eyes narrowing.
A word.
Speak,
Kale replied.
I've made no secret of my reservations about the esteemed tech priest's motive and manner,
said the captain.
I cannot let this pass without comment.
His face took on the cast of anger and old fear.
By the Emperor's grace, I am a veteran of many conflicts with the Xenos, those Tyranid abominations among them.
Gorilev's words brimmed with venom.
Those things. I've seen them rape worlds and leave nothing but ashen husks in their wake.
He leaned closer.
That hive ship should not be studied like some curiosity. It should be atomized.
Kale held up a hand. and Gorilev fell silent.
There is nothing you have said I disagree with, Shipmaster. But we are servants of the God Emperor, Nord and I, you and your crew, even Zeren. And we have our duty.
For a moment it seemed as if Gorilev were about to argue. But then he nodded grimly, resigned to fulfill his orders.
Duty, then. In the Emperor's name.
In the Emperor's name, said Kale.
Nord opened his mouth to repeat the oath, but he found his voice silenced. So fleeting, so mercurial and indistinct that it was gone, even as he turned his senses towards it, Nord felt something. The sense of black and red clouds pressed in on the edges of his thoughts, and he pushed them away.
Nord?
He found Kale studying him with a careful gaze. He cleared his thoughts with a moment's effort.
Brother Sergeant, he replied. The mission, then?
Kale nodded.
The mission? Aye.
The boarding torpedo penetrated the hull of the Tyranid vessel high along the dorsal surface. Serrated iron razor cogs bit into the bony structure and turned, ripping at shell matter and bunches of necrotic muscle, dragging the pod through layers of decking into the voids of the hive ship's interior. Then, at rest, the seals released and the space marines deployed into the alien hulk, weapons rising to the ready. Sergeant Kale led, as he always did, from the front. He slipped down from the mouth of the boarding torpedo, playing his bolt pistol back and forth, sweeping the chamber for threats. Nord was next, then Brother Dane, Brother Seerun, and finally Koray, who moved with care as he cradled his flamer. The Codicia felt the floor beneath his boots give under his weight. The decking, if it could be called that, was rough plates of bone atop something that could only be flesh, stretching away in an arching, curved corridor. By degrees, the chamber lightened as Nord's oculobe implant contracted, adjusting the perception range of his eyes. Great arching walls that resembled flayed meat rose around the blood angels, along with fluted spires made of greasy black cartilage that drooled thin fluids. Puckered sphincters lay sagging and open, allowing a slaughterhouse stench to reach them. Here and there were signs of internal damage, long festering wounds open and caked with Xenos blood. Nord picked out glowing bowls upon the walls, arranged at random intervals. It took a moment before he realized that they were actually fist-sized beetles, clinging to the skin walls, antennae waving gently, bodies lit with dull bioluminescence. There were more insectile creatures in the shadows, little arachnid things that moved sluggishly, crawling in and out of the raw-edged cuts.
Damage everywhere,
noted Seerun, his gruff voice flattened by the thick air of the Tyranid craft.
But no signs of weapons fire.
It appears the Tech Priest was right.
Kale examined one of the walls.
Whatever fate befell this ruin, it was not caused by battle.
Brother Seerun studied the sensor runes on the Orspec's device in his hand.
A faint trace from the Adept's personal locator.
He pointed in an aftward direction.
That way.
Kale's gaze drifted towards Nord.
Is he alive? This man Indus?
The Psyker stiffened, warily extending his preternatural senses forward. He could discern only the pale glitters of thought energy from the spider things and the lamp beetles. Nothing that might suggest a reasoning mind, let alone a human one.
I have no answer for you, sir,
he said at length.
With caution, then, brothers.
Kale walked on, and they followed him, silent and vigilant. The corridor narrowed into a tube, and Nord imagined it a gullet down which the Astartes were travelling. He had encountered Tyranids before, but only upon the field of battle, and then down the sights of a missile launcher. He had never ventured aboard one of their craft, and it was exactly the horror he had expected it to be. Tyranid vessels were not the product of forges and shipyards. They were spawned. They were living things. Animals, by some vague definition of the term. Electrochemical processes and nerve ganglions transmitted commands about its flesh. Pheromonic discharges regulated its internal atmosphere. Exothermic chemistry created light and heat. Its hull was skeletal matter, protecting the crew that swarmed like parasites inside the gut of the craft. Together, the hive was a contained, freakish ecosystem, drifting from world to world, driven by the need to feed and feed. Even in this half-dead state, Nord could taste the echo of that aching, bone-deep craving, as if it were leaking from the twitching walls. The fleshy wattles that dangled from the ceiling, the corpse-gray cilia and phlegmy deposits around his feet, all of it sickened him as much with its dead stench as the sheer, revolting affront of the Tyranid's very existence. This Xenos abortion was everything that the Imperium, in all its human glory, was not. A chaotic riot of mutant life, disordered and rapacious, without soul or intellect. Nord's hand tightened around his pistol. The urge to kill this thing rose high, and he reined it in, denying the tingle of a building rage before it had freedom to form. The chamber broadened into an uneven space, dotted with deep pits of muddy liquid that festered and spat, gaseous discharges chugging into the fetid air. Siran gestured.
Rendering pools. Biomass is brought here to be denatured into a liquid slurry.
Kore spoke for the first time since they had boarded.
To what end?
To feed the hive,
Siran replied.
This gruel is the raw material of the Tyranids. They consume it, shape it. It is where they are born from.
Kale dropped to his haunches.
And where they kill,
he added. The sergeant picked something metallic from the spoil heaps and turned it in his fingers. A rank sigil of iron and copper, a disc cut to resemble a cogwheel. Upon it, the design of a skull, the symbol of the Adeptus Mechanicus. Kore turned his face and spat in disgust.
Emperor, protect me from such a fate.
More here, said Brother Dane. With care, he drew to him a twisted shape afloat on one of the pools. It was a man's ribcage and part of a spine, but the bone was rubbery and distended where acidic fluids had eaten into it. It crumbled like wet sand in the Blood Angel's grip.
Adept Indus, perhaps. And his scout team,
Kale suggested. He turned to face Nord and saw the Psyker glaring into the dimness.
Brother?
The question had barely left his lips when the Codicia gave an explosive shout.
Enemy!
The shapes came at them from out of the twisted, sinewy ropes about the walls. Three beasts, bursting from concealment as one, attacking from all sides. Kore was quick, clutching the trigger bar of his flamer. A bright gout of blazing promethium jetted from the bellmouth of the weapon and engulfed the closest Tyranid in flames, but on it came, falling into the red wave of death. The second skittered across the ground, low and fast, dragging itself in loping jerks by its taloned limbs and great curved claws. Dane, Siran, and the sergeant turned their bolters on it in a hail of punishing steel. The third found Nord and dived at him, falling from the ceiling, spinning about as it came. The Tyranid landed hard and rocked off its hooves. Nord got his first good look at the thing, and recognition unfolded in his forebrain. The legacy of 100 hypnagogic combat indoctrination tapes. A lictor. Humanoid in form, tall and festooned with barbs. They sported massive scything talons and a cobra head tail. Where a man would have a mouth, the lictors grew a wriggling orchard of feeder tendrils. They were hunter-predator forms, deployed alone or in small packs, stealthy and favored of ambush attacks. Unless Nord and his brothers killed them quickly, they would spill fresh pheromones into the air and summon more of their kind. He reversed and met the alien with the flickering crystal edge of the axe, reaching into his heart and finding the reservoir of psychic might lurking within him. As the axe head bit into the lictor's chest, Nord channeled a quickening from the warp along the weapon's psi convector and into the Xenos' new wound. its agonized shriek battered at him, and he staggered as it tried to claw through his armor. He withdrew the axe and struck again, over and over, riding on the battle anger welling up inside him. The Blood Angel was dimly aware of a death wail off to his right, half glimpsing another Lictor fall as it was opened by shellfire and chainblade. But his target still lived. A talon swept down, barbs screeching as they scored Nord's chestplate. In turn, he let the axe fall again, this time severing a monstrous limb at the joint. Gouts of black blood spurted, burning where it landed, and the Codicia threw a wall of psionic pressure outward, battering at the wounded creature. The Lictor's hooves slipped on the lip of a biopool, and it stumbled backwards into the lake of stringy muck. Instantly, the churning acids ate into the Tyranid, and it collapsed, drowning and melting. Nord regained his balance and waved a hand in front of his visor as oily smoke wafted past. The third Tyranid was also dying, finally succumbing to Kore's flamer and the impacts of crack grenades. A mechanical voice grated through his vox link.
Tail, respond. This is Zeren. We have detected weapons fire. Report status immediately.
Ignoring the buzzing of the tech priest, the Psyker approached the last dying Lictor as Kore took aim with his flamer, twisting the nozzle to adjust the dispersal pattern. The Force Axe still humming in his hand, his psychic power resonating through him, Nord caught the sense of the Tyranid's animal mind, trapped in its death throes. He winced, the touch of it more abhorrent to him than anything he had yet witnessed aboard the hive ship. Yet there, in the mass of its unknowable alien thoughts, he glimpsed something. Great swirling clouds of red and black, and men. Robed men with skeletal limbs of metal and copper cogs about their necks. Kore pulled the trigger and laid a snake of fire over the beast, boiling its soft tissues beneath the hard chitin armor. Nord sheathed his axe and heard the voice again. Zeren seemed impatient.
Perhaps you should not engage every Tyranid you see.
Kale was plucking spent flesh hooks from the crevices of his armor with quick, spare motions.
The Xenos did not offer us the choice, priest. And I remind you who it was that told us this ship was dead.
Where the Tyranids are concerned, there are degrees of death. The ship is dormant, and so the majority of the swarm aboard should be quiescent. But some may retain a wakeful state. I suggest you avoid further engagements.
I will take that under advisement.
Kale retorted. Zeren continued.
You are proceeding too slowly, Brother Sergeant, and without efficiency. Indus is the primary objective. Divide your forces to cover a greater area. Find him for me.
The sergeant holstered his gun, and any reply he might have made was rendered pointless as the tech priest cut the vox signal. Siran's hands closed into fists.
He dares break commands as if he were chapter master. The scrawny cog has no right.
Decorum, kinsman, said Kale. We are the sons of Sanguinius. A mere tech priest is not worth our enmity. We'll find Zeren's lost adept soon enough, and be done.
If he still lives,
mused Kore, nudging the powdery bones with his boot. Reluctantly, Brother Sergeant Kale chose to do as the tech priest had suggested. Beyond the biopool chamber, the throat corridors branched, and he ordered Dane to break off, taking Kore and Siran with him. The Psyker threw the veteran a questioning look when he voiced the orders. In turn, Kale's expression remained unchanged.
Zeren and I agree on one point, he noted. We both wish this mission to be concluded as quickly as possible.
Nord had to admit he too shared that desire. He thought of Gorilev's words aboard the Amethia. The shipmaster was right. This monstrous hulk was an insult every second it was allowed to exist. Dane's team vanished into the clammy darkness, and Nord followed Kale onward. They passed through more rendering chambers, then rooms seemingly constructed from waxy matter, laced with spherical pods, each one wet and dripping ichor. They encountered other strange spaces that defied any interpretation of form or function, hollows where tooth-like spires crisscrossed from floor and ceiling. A copse of bulbous, acid-rimed fronds that resembled coral polyps, and great bladders that throbbed, thick liquid emerging from them in desultory jerks. And there were the creatures. The first time they came across the alien forms, Nord's axe had come to his hand before he was even aware of it. But the Tyranids they encountered were in some state that mirrored death, a strange hibernative trance that rendered them inert. They crossed a high catwalk formed from spinal bone, and Kael used the pin lamp beneath the barrel of his bolt gun to throw a disc of light into the pits below. The glow picked out the hulking shape of a massive carnifex, its bullet-shaped head tucked into its spiny chest in some mad parody of a sleeping child. The rasping breaths of the huge assault organism fogged the air, bone armor and spines scraping across one another as its chest rose and fell. Around the gnarled hooves of the slumbering carnifex, a clutch of deadly hormigaunts rested, shiny, oil-black carapaces piled atop one another, clawed limbs folded back, talons sheathed. Nord gripped the force axe firmly, and it took a near physical effort for him to turn from the gallery of targets before him. Instead, they moved on, ever on, picking their way in stealth through the very heart of the hive's dozing populace.
Why do they ignore us?
Kael wondered, his question transmitted to the vox bead in Nord's ear.
They are conserving their strength, Brother Sergeant,
he replied.
Whatever incident caused this ship to fall away from the rest of its hive fleet, it must have drained them to survive it. I would not question our luck.
Aye,
Kael replied.
Terra protects.
Aye.
The force axe fell from Nord's fingers, and the impact upon the bone deck seemed louder than cannon fire. Suddenly, without warning, it was there. A black and cloying touch enveloping his thoughts. The same sense of something alien he had felt aboard the Amathia.
There is something else here,
he husked.
A psychic phantom, just beyond my reach, measuring itself against me.
Nord's heart hammered in his chest. He tasted metal in his mouth.
Not just the Xenos. More than that.
The dark dream uncoiled in his thoughts, the rumbling pulse of the red thirst in his gullet, the churn of the black rage stiffening his muscles. All about him, the shadows seemed to lengthen and loom, leaking from the walls, ranging across the sleeping monsters to reach for the warrior with ebon fingers. Nord gasped.
Something is awakening.
Across the plane of the hive ship's hull, Brother Dane brought up his fist in a gesture of command, halting Kore and Siran.
Do you hear that?
He asked. Kore turned, the flamer in his grip.
It's coming from the walls.
They were the last words he would utter. Flesh matter all around the squad ripped and tore into bleeding rags as claws shredded their way towards the Astartes. With brutal, murderous power, a tide of chattering freaks boiled in upon them, spines and bone and armored heads moving in blurs. Gunfire lit the corridor, the flat bang of bolter shells sounding shot after shot, the chugging belch of fire from the flamer issuing out to seek targets. In return came screaming, the blood-hungry shrieks of a warrior brood turned loose to find prey. The horde of Tyranid soldier organisms rolled over the Space Marines with no regard for their own safety. They were simply the blades of the hive, and the very presence of the human intruders was enough to drive them mad. Perhaps beings with intellect might have sensed the hand of something larger, something at the back of their thoughts, compelling them